Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Women's College World Series edition of the 7 Innings Podcast. We were setting some new records this year. First of all, cheers, everybody. We are in Oklahoma City.
Cheers, everybody.
And
cheers.
For the first time, we also have our first studio audience.
Woo!
Yes. We're going to run down all our coverage for you. We're going to get underway Thursday at noon. Of course, we got the quadruple header all day Thursday. We'll break down all 4 of the matchups. We're going to shag some stats. We're going to give me some Jimmy. And a very special flashback coming your way with national champions that have actually been there on the field celebrating. We're going to flashback with them in the room. BMO, Holroe, Smitty, Doza, Scarborough, Rutrow, Molly Mall, Adam, D-Lo with the V-Lo, Bro, and Jimmy Softball all in attendance. I think I got everybody. Yes, Smitty, you got everybody. Let's talk about Oklahoma City and why we love this place so much. You've been coming here how many years now, Smitty?
Well, I have been coming to the Women's College World Series on and off because when I was playing professionally in Japan, I couldn't always make every one of them. Yeah. But I went to school at Oklahoma State University.
Eskimo Joe's.
Yes, Eskimo Joe's. Fabulous place. Unfortunately, my appearance at the Women's College World Series was in Sunnyvale, California. Sorry, Jess. I know that all things California are fabulous, but these fields were not. They were slow pitch fields. They were slow pitch fields, and they were so sloped that a bunt wouldn't even stay fair. But sure. Anyway, back to Oklahoma City. You know what? The fans, the people, the community—they've embraced it. They've built it. USA Softball's done a lot, and I think that the field renovations coming up are going to be fabulous.
Yes, year 12, and I literally remember. I think every time we come on air in Beth's voice, I think about playing here.
You know.
And you just remember what it feels like to be a player. And you think about these players because really they're the story. And it's our job here to tell those stories, to be able to show the emotions and everything. Because I remember feeling that. And so even 12 years going, which is crazy to me because now I feel super old, I absolutely love coming back and being able to tell these stories.
This is Holly, and I'm going to look up what our presents will be for each other. But Beth and I are celebrating 2 very special milestones, anniversaries. This is my 15th year.
Woo! What kind of jewelry is that, just out of curiosity?
I'll look up.
Diamond, for sure.
Give me 20 seconds. I'll look up my gifts
Some
for
sort
myself.
Of blank.
But more importantly, I'm going to get choked up if I say this, but the voice of our sport is Beth Mullins, and she is celebrating her 25th Women's College World Series.
I believe that's gold. I believe that's gold, everyone.
Is that the gold anniversary?
Pony up.
Like, awesome. We just want you to know how much we love and appreciate you. You keep every stat. This binder has a binder of the entire history.
Board's under construction.
Yeah. Yep. The personal pride you take in keeping the history of this sport and sharing with everyone, we love and appreciate you so much.
Well, thank you. You know what the best part is for me is when you get a kid, we interview all the teams when they show up here. You get a kid that says, I watched you guys when I was 10 years old. And now I'm here, and I can't wait to play on this field. Or you get somebody like a Danielle Laurie or a Kayla Bro when they come back and they say, when we all get together with our teammates, we love watching the highlights of all you guys calling the games. That's what kind of gets me
or
choked
up. Or when
we're
meeting with Arizona last week, and they're like, there's a face to the voice, voice I've always heard as a child. They got so geeked up.
By the way, Jessie Harper had the best weekend of her career last weekend after we saw her.
She was so excited to hear Beth Mullins' voice in person. She got bright red. She's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm listening to you talk. But she heard Beth Mullins talk. So.
And as a side note real quick, I just want to say, as an athlete that plays a sport, Danielle Bro, Jessica and Amanda, for all of us ballers that have played the sport, thank you to all of you guys. We have ESPN. We have amazing people that love our sport. We love our sport because we love our sport. But you guys, it truly, thank you for everything that you have done for us and for our sport.
Cash money, homie. Scarborough, you played here, and now you're calling games here.
Yeah, that is a full circle moment. But I just remember being a fan first and watching it specifically in 2005, whenever Michigan won it, and staying up late. We went to one of my teammates' house, and there were 3 of us, I think, watching it just all night. And that was my first real memory of, like, and I was a freshman then for this year, like, wait, that's what I was trying to get to play for? Because I just didn't know about it as much as I did that year, just being invested and watching it as a fan and growing into it and seeing what it's grown now into now. So fan first and then player, but I still think of it as a fan. And a player, too. It's great to play here, but I think of it as a fan of the sport.
I started watching it, and I watched all you guys on this, and actually I watched Amanda, too, during the Super Regionals. 2011 was my first year where I watched it, and it was Arizona State, the last time a Pac-12 team won the title. That was the first time I really got exposed to it, because that year I called my first Division II World Series, and later that summer is when ESPN hired me, and I was 24 at the time. And I just thought, wow, that'd be kind of cool to keep doing softball at some point. And I got to do it with Amanda. We did like a couple of like conference championship games and a super regional together. Actually, it wasn't even us that year. I was with Jenny Finch that year. And then 2014, we started working together. And 2015 was our first World Series together. So just in a small amount of time, 7 years of kind of really paying attention to the sport from the Division II level on, it's kind of nuts that we actually get a chance to play in the candy store that is the World Series now.
And it's worth mentioning, we've already had a couple of championships contested and won at the D2 and the D3 levels.
And I was so excited to run into in the lobby today at the Sheraton. I may have been stalking people in the lobby. I'm just going to say that. The Division II national
allegedly
champions. Yes. Good stocking. The Virginia Wesleyan University just won back-to-back national champions for Division II. And I was lucky enough to catch up with their three-time first-team All-American. I am here with Virginia Wesleyan University, Cassidy Howren, and you just won the Division III national championship on Hall of Fame Stadium Field. What was that like for your team to walk away as national champs today?
It was an incredible feeling. I mean, winning it last year and coming back, it's hard to do back to back, but it was a great feeling being able to pull it out in our last ever time stepping on the field as seniors. So,
well, congratulations. You also broke the career NCAA walks record. Tell me why you are such a patient approach at the plate.
Well, ever since I came into this program, people have been scared to pitch to me because when they do, I make things happen, whether it's a home run or a base clearing double. But coming in, I have to be patient because I know I'm not going to get much to swing at. So when I do get something to swing at, I have to make the most of it because I know I'm probably never going to see that pitch again.
Division III, I know that, you know, a lot of us don't give you guys enough attention, and we're going to change that with our interview today. But what was it like to be on Hall of Fame Stadium Field knowing that you're playing in the same place that the World Series is going to be played on later this week?
It's awesome. I mean, last year we got to do it for the first time ever. And a week later, we got to watch some of the big-name softball players in Division I play on that field, and we can be like, hey, we played there too. Like, we did exactly what Oklahoma did last year. We won. So it was a great feeling, honestly.
Well, thanks for joining us. That is your three-time first-team All-American and back-to-back national champion, Cassidy Howren. Thank you, Cassidy.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Virginia Wesleyan, and congratulations to the D2 champs from Southern Indiana, everybody.
Cheers.
Raise it. Toasting. Raise it. Southern toasting. Indiana.
Congratulations.
Congrats. Yeah. D2 and D3 champs. All right, we're moving down. If you're following us at 7innings on Twitter and on the gram, you got your lineup card. We're going to start diving into our matchups now. And let's talk about Oregon and Arizona State. We got four Pac-12 schools that are here ready to break through to win one since the last time you saw them in 2011.
That's right.
For the first time.
Dallas Escobedo was a freshman that year. They've got a young pitcher this year, sophomore in G. Juarez, that has just been outstanding. Really, really low ERA. Amanda and I were talking about this earlier. It doesn't seem like anybody's really paying much attention. Granted, we have all top 8 seeds, and it's only the third time it's ever happened, but this is the 8 seed Arizona State that you feel actually could be a sleeper. You saw them in the regionals.
She just can be so dominant. And by the way, this is Amanda. I don't know if you guys can tell the difference between Adam and I's voice.
It's very close.
The registers are so uncannily similar.
I just think nobody's talking about them, and Juarez can be dominant. So you have to have a pitcher get hot, take you through the tournament. And Bree Maha has been a great backup to her. She's a veteran. She's a senior. She's been through a lot of coaching changes and just the ringer at Arizona State. But it's their entire team's first time to make it to the Women's College World Series.
Yeah, Tricia Ford is a fresh head coach. She's the youngest tenured head coach among the World Series. We have like 7 of the 8, I think, have been here for 9 or more years at their respective schools. Mike White's been there for 9 at Oregon.
Well, I would just like to pat someone on the back. This is Holly, and I would also like to pat Holly Rowe on the back.
Let me do that for you.
In our third episode, I actually had called Tricia Ford because I was looking at records and who was doing what, and I was like, no one's giving Arizona State any love, and I think they're really good. So I brought up on this podcast Tricia Ford, and I think part of their story and their DNA is she was somebody who maybe was overlooked in her playing career, and so she brought G. Juarez, who had been signed up, who was maybe going to go to Fresno State, had been overlooked in her playing career, and now she's at Arizona State. So she looks for the scrappy, under-recruited kid that has something to prove, and that's the DNA of this Arizona State team. And so I'm really excited that they got here, but I just wanted to say that I was all over that.
Patting you on the back.
It's a very hard back she has, by the way.
I'm fascinated by the mentality of these two teams. Does Arizona State come in feeling no pressure whatsoever? Hey, let's go after this thing the way that they did the first time they won it in 2008 with the Katies. And does Oregon feel some pressure? Or is this a different team like we've been talking about during the regular season? They have the tougher mentality coming in this year.
They haven't made it to the finals yet. Again, this is their fifth trip under Mike White. They've been to the semifinals a couple of times. But their offense always struggled. Always. They always had a brutal offensive stretch when they got to the World Series. But last year, they finally busted out. They scored seven runs against Baylor. Most of that lineup, including just about the entire pitching staff that got a lot of great experience last year, is back. So my biggest question on that side of the bracket is, what does Oregon have that gives them an edge once they get here? And I'm looking forward to finding that out.
Well, I actually thought that they had put their mental issues aside. And, you know, they're the number one overall seed. I thought that this year they had all the pieces. They have a pitching staff. They have offense. They have defense. And then when they lost the opening game to Kentucky, I was like, what the blankety blank blank? Because I just thought that they
she
were better.
She actually said blankety blank blank. Yeah, there was
even,
no actual swearing.
It
was
out.
She legitimately said blankety blank.
But I literally was at home swearing, like, what? Now, I know Kentucky's good, and I'm very proud of that team. I love the Wildcats. But I was disappointed in how Oregon started because they let their nerves get the better of them. So they cannot come out like that and be in the loser's bracket on Thursday. They have to be mentally strong.
Well, I love the way that Miranda Ellish came out and set the tone for them. I feel like she is fierce in the circle, and that's that one adjective describing a pitcher that I feel like Oregon pitching has been lacking in the circle. And it hasn't been their pitching, so to speak. It has been their offense that hasn't put up the same numbers. But at the same time, you have to believe this Oregon team can hit the ball out of the ballpark at any time and bring their offense and really be a contender, especially because they're the number one seed.
So that's the number one Oregon Ducks, the number eight seed Arizona State. Who's the ace, by the way, right now for the Ducks? You've got Miranda Ellish and Megan Kleist. You've got a good hitter in Gwen Savekas and Jenna Lilly in that leadoff spot. For Arizona State, I think keep your eye on the freshman Danielle Gibson and junior Morgan Howe is a terrific hitter for them. Let's move on to number three.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. Let's move on to number three on your lineup card. It's Oklahoma, the four seed, the two-time defending champs, and the five-seed Washington Huskies. Let's talk about the Sooners and a chance to repeat, and then we're going to bring in Danielle Laurie, who's a part of our new studio coverage this year, to talk about some Washington Huskies as well. But what do we think? OU coming in looking awfully good, Amanda Scarborough.
Well, they have a completely different team than what they had last year.
Wait for it.
No.
No, they don't.
No, wait. No.
Well, they do have the newly minted National Freshman of the Year.
They do.
Jocelyn
Ello.
So,
I guess they didn't have that last year, but every single face that you're going to see out there is who you saw playing for them last year, and they have the experience. They know what it takes to win here. They know what it takes to step up in the big moments. Shea Knighton, Sydney Romero, and you have to have those big moments in Oklahoma City, and nobody knows them better than OU lately.
You guys saw them Friday night, Oklahoma and Washington, in a winner's bracket game last year, so that'll be a rematch of that game last year. Paige Parker is obviously going to be one of the great stories. You guys were doing an Oklahoma State game and talked to Patty Gasso about it, and she said that Paige Parker is the best pitcher to pitch at Oklahoma, and I
That's
think
right.
you said that she apologized on air to Kalani Ricketts
when she did
that.
Yeah.
I mean, think about the lineup pitchers, Michelle Gascoigne, Jennifer Stewart, Kalani, I mean, DJ Mathis, Cammy Kiter. There's so many great pitchers that have pitched at OU, and she says that Paige Parker is on the top of that list, but as great as she has been, she's undefeated, 8-0 in her career at the World Series, but 2.27 ERA. That doesn't sound very big, but when you compare it to what she's done this year, and the rest of her career, this has been the spot where she's had a little bit more struggle. So that's my biggest question for them.
How does somebody beat them? Who beats them? Perhaps it's the Washington Huskies. Ladies and gentlemen, she's been campaigning all year to get on the show. She's paid us a lot of money. She's brought us copious amounts of wine. And now, making her debut on the big stage, Danielle Lurie.
Happy to be here. I have like little butterflies in my tummy. This is a good feeling. It's been a while.
I think that's the wine, actually.
I mean, as far as Washington goes, I don't think they're in the place they are right now without Gabby Plain. What she's had to do the last couple weeks looking. Yeah. I mean, we don't really know the big details as far as what's going on with Taryn, but without Gabby, I don't see them being in the postseason. And then on the flip side, depending on Taryn's health, I think if she's able to rely on what she did preseason the past couple years, she has beat OU, but she just wasn't able to do it last year on the biggest stage in the Women's College World Series. So it's really figuring out, I think, the emotions for her on the pitching department, if she is someone that is going to face them. And then on the flip side, offensively, Washington is good at the top of their lineup. I think it really comes down to if he, the freshman, is someone that can come up in the 6-hole, 7-hole, and have success. But the top of the order is strong, and they really, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, they struggled a little bit, and obviously they were on a really hot streak. They were number one in the country. Then they ran into a couple of buzzsaws, UCLA and Oregon back-to-back. They struggled against Arizona State a little bit as well. They lost 2 out of 3. So the three Pac-12 teams that they faced that are here are the teams that they had the biggest struggles against. They got hot offensively lately in the year, regionals, last series against Oregon State, but the competition obviously not to the level that they're going to see here in OKC.
Well, I think Washington is super athletic, and they put a ton of pressure on defenses. So I was actually at Oklahoma's practice last night, and they were really working on third base, shortstop, second base, getting the ball out quick, making quick, efficient plays, because they know this Washington team is athletic and has speed and is going to put pressure on the defense.
Get ready for defense and some SportsCenter top 10 plays, because Oklahoma either has 18 or 19 errors. What is it, Adam?
19 errors.
19 errors on this season, and Washington only has 30. So you combine, that's only 49 errors between both teams, and they are going to be a highlight reel. Every single position can make a big play.
You know what we call that?
What?
Glove love.
Nice.
Oh, well
nice
done. Well done, love. Holly Rowe.
Anytime you can get love in there. I want to hear from Danielle Lurie about the mentality on this stage. How do you describe what it takes in your head when you're in the circle, when you're in that batter's box on this stage?
Man, I think that there's pivotal moments throughout a career, or excuse me, throughout your season that like can kind of help define that. And they had a little bit of that struggle going in when they went to the extra innings with Alabama. So they also have to pull from the fact that they did drop a lot of big series in Pac-12 play. I mean, they lost to UCLA 3 in a row, and there's a lot of big series that they should have won. And as far as being number one the whole year, I think that that put more pressure on themselves than they even anticipated. So it's kind of coming in with the underdog mentality, even though they don't really feel that way. And as far as the mentality, I mean, it's the emotions. Coming into the Women's College World Series, game one, right out of the gate, I think sometimes you can try to do too much. So it's really pulling from what has allowed you to be in that spotlight leading up to the Women's College World Series. There's just so much that plays into it.
Yeah, and so the one thing I want to add about Washington is like you were saying, Danielle, is they lost three games to UCLA, and then they lost three games at home to Oregon, that six-game losing streak, both those clubs being here. Really, the pressure should be off for them. They should go out there and just play with reckless abandonment and just be like, hey, we have absolutely nothing to lose. You get Avello back, you've got Plain, you got Vanzi.
Or reckless abandon.
Oh, yeah, one of those. One of those. Give me another glass of wine.
I'll tell you what, this Danielle kid, she's got a bright future.
No, you know what? I wanted to say D-Lo with the V-Lo. D-Lo with the V-Lo. No, I think Danielle Lurie had what I would describe as the B factor in the circle, the beast mode.
Yes.
I thought you were going to say something else.
I wanted to say something else, but this is a family program, so I went with Beast instead of what I really wanted to say.
We got to move on to our next game, but you had a chance to chat with some other people. You were busy today.
Yes, my Sheraton.
Speaking of B,
my
busiest B.
Lobby stocking paid off very well when I was able to catch up with 4 different Georgia Bulldogs all together. This is called multi-purpose interviewing, but it's really exciting. Many of them are here for the first time. Some of them are return participants, so I caught up with Georgia.
I'm catching up with the Georgia crew. This is Mary Wilson Avant pitching in the circle. You have been called on late in the season because of injuries. How have you really risen to the challenge?
I think just like the infield and the outfield and the rest of the team, they've helped me stay calm in pressure situations, and so that's helped a lot.
And now here you are in the World Series, Alyssa DiCarlo, one of the top hitters in the country, and first team All-SEC. How do you think Georgia's really gelling right now?
I think our mindset is really good. We have a lot of confidence going into this week or weekend. And yeah, I think we trust and believe in each other, and it's really fun to play on this team.
All right, Kendall Burton, you have overcome so much. That's not your only story, though. You've been playing every game for Georgia this year. How have you been able to be so tough out there for the Georgia Bulldogs?
It's easy when you have a team like the team that we have. Everyone has your back no matter what. So it's just a lot easier to know that you have everyone right there in your back pocket every pitch, every time something goes wrong, whether you're on the field or not. So that's the only answer I have.
All right. And it does not surprise me at all that this young lady just steals up to the interview. She just came in behind us, stealing her way into our hearts and minds. Courtney Emanuel, the steel speed queen. That was nerdy, right? Was that nerdy? They're all looking at me like that was nerdy. But she did. She just came in late to the interview. This is kind of your last go around here. Tell me what it's like. You've been here before with your big sister, but now here you are kind of leading the way.
It's just awesome. It's awesome to be able to finish my season here in Oklahoma City and just play for the last time and compete for a national championship.
Okay, you guys can't see this because it's a podcast, but can we talk about your hair? They're going over to their video shoots right now. What is happening with your hair? It's spectacular.
So I have 1, 2, 3, 4 braids with the little gold beads. These are little thingies we
hair
all
jewelry.
Wear.
We call it hair jewelry.
Hair jewelry. There we go.
Yep.
We wear them all of us wear them for the game. We all have like braids in or whatever. And then I have the half up in a bun with the curls and a whole bunch of product in it.
Okay. Yeah. So we're breaking down the on the field play plus the hair for the video shoot. There you have it, Georgia Bulldogs.
Give me a go dogs.
Go dogs.
Go dogs. And this is a Georgia team that has had some success. So I think going back to 2010, they have a 500 record against Florida. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to number 5 after we had the Dogs in the cleanup spot with an impressive regular season after the loss of Brittany Gray. What are we expecting against Florida, and who are the Gators going to start in this game?
Well, the Gators starting, to go to the latter question instead of the former, to me, it's interesting because you got Kelly Barnhill on one end, who's the stud pitcher. And honestly, if you haven't been watching softball season long, this is the player of the year last year. This is one of the best pitchers in the country. However, if any team has her number, it's the Georgia Bulldogs. You go back to March 16th, mark it on your calendar, look it up, find the game. Illegal pitches, yes, but also back-to-back-to-back home runs. Only had given up one prior to it went. She's got now 17 since before that series. So you think about what that series did to her. This is the matchup you want, but is it going to be Barnhill, Smitty?
And that's a great question, Jess. You know what? I think if you're Tim Walton, I think you have to throw Barnhill because you need her to win a national championship. So you want to get her on the horse. You want to get her straightened out. And I think no matter who he does start throughout this tournament, I think he has to have a really quick hook. The key, I think, for Florida, though, is going to be able to score runs early. Both those pitchers are far better when they're pitching with a lead versus when they're pitching even or from behind, because obviously an offense is going to have to be more aggressive when they're hitting from behind.
Do you guys think that pitchers have a tendency to get tighter? I know we've discussed this before about pitchers with, you know, they have a tendency to pitch every pitch like it's an 0-2 count. Do you think pitchers have a tendency when they get on a big stage, Smitty, to get a little bit tighter and try to be almost too fine when they get to this point?
Well, yeah, and I think any time as a pitcher you're a strikeout pitcher and potentially trying to strike batters out, that's when the bad things happen. And a lot of Barnhill's home runs have been given up while she's ahead. And as a pitcher, you should never really give up your home runs when you're ahead, potentially behind. What do you think?
But this is also when players step up. I mean, to me, when you see the best, one sitting in this room, Danielle Lurie, Amanda Scarborough, the best pitchers are when the pressure's on. Because, Adam, I agree with you. I've seen more pitchers fail and more hitters. Players, I get it. The pressure's on.
Sure.
You're going to fail because you make it bigger than it is. But the best, which is why they're the top 3% that we'll ever see in the game, are the ones that understand the pressure, embrace the freaking pressure, and take that natty championship.
I think that Ocasio is starting tomorrow, just to go back to that matchup, and we'll see what just – well, not tomorrow. I guess they're not playing. We'll talk to them at the interviews tomorrow.
Or Thursday.
Thursday. I really think Ocasio is going to start.
Why?
She keeps the ball down. Georgia hits a lot of home runs. They're feeling great at the plate. Mm-hmm. She has a better ability to keep the ball in the ballpark. And I think that Kelly might still, I don't know this for sure. She's not told me this, but still be thinking about that game versus Georgia when they knocked her around a little bit.
I think those are the two. I think who starts for Florida and who starts for Oregon. Fascinating on Thursday. Ladies and gentlemen, we've had a bromance with this young lady since the first time she strapped on those cleats and put the glove on and patrolled the outfield at the Rhodes House. She saw both the Gators and the Dogs at the SEC tournament just a few weeks ago. Bro!
Woo!
Thank you for having me. It has been a pleasure listening all season, so I'm just happy to be a part of this. I got to see, and I've been watching Florida and Georgia all year, working for the SEC Network. I get to literally pretty much keep my eyes glued on the TV when those two teams are playing. But the big thing that I saw earlier this season with Georgia and Florida was Georgia's grittiness and gutsiness to approach Kelly Barnhill on a completely different level. I mean, they saw her best pitch, which is her rise ball, and they went looking for it and attacking it, and I think that's where they won that series, is they had a game plan and they executed better than Florida did. So if Florida is going to decide to pitch Barnhill, I think she's got to show some versatility, throw a few different pitches, mix some stuff up, and really challenge them on the lower half of the strike zone and get her screwball called for a strike if they want to beat the Bulldogs.
So are they sitting rise? Like,
absolutely.
Do people sit the rise? That
absolutely.
Seems crazy to me.
It is crazy,
but she throws it, I think, at a lower velocity. Yeah. I think it moves, but not as drastically as some of her other pitches.
And I think when you're looking for it and you adjust your swing, you adjust your hands and adjust the plane, you can attack it.
And side note, she's trying to keep her foot down so she's not called for illegal pitches. I think that's part of the issue,
too, with
that pitch.
Yeah, probably not getting as much of a jump with that,
exactly.
That explosion.
Time, exactly.
Leverage, yeah.
Does Georgia have to win 7-6, or how does Avant have a chance, or what does she need to do?
Mary Wilson Avant, just for those who don't know, has stepped into the circle, had only started 3 previous games before.
Yes.
This is my grown-up.
Patting her on the back again.
She's getting prepared for Shag and Staff.
Yeah. This is my grown-up, in case you missed it, voice. So, Brittany Gray, the ace of Georgia, who had like a 0.27 ERA, bicep injury in April, and Mary Wilson Avant came into the circle after only 3 starts all season and has been terrific. And you lose your ace and you get to the World Series.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Incredible.
That's the Georgia. Think of Georgia. Historically, they are crazy. They hunt for rise balls.
Oh,
they,
you almost swore right there.
Jesse's very passionate about
she
rise balls.
She almost
ball
went effing rise balls.
She loves the offense.
It's all about hunting rise balls.
I love it.
No, don't you remember when Taylor Schloepy had to come in from the center field and start
Taylor,
pitching?
Taylor
Schloepy.
Yeah. You said Taylor Schloepy.
Taylor Schloepy. It's not that easy of a name to say. She had to run in from center field and pitch, and she hadn't pitched forever at the World Series.
And it worked.
Crazy stuff happens.
Shout out to Sweet Lou and the Crew 22 for the job.
SEC Coach of the Year.
That's going to be
good job, Sweet Lou.
That's going to be fascinating. Georgia and Florida.
Lou Harris Champer.
All right, we got one. By the way, let me backtrack 1 second. Is this Tim Walton's last week with the Florida Gators? There's been a lot of talk.
Are you going there?
There's been a lot of talk about the opening at Texas. Who's going to get the Texas job?
Wow.
What do we think?
Is that a party foul to talk about this while they're
no, every other sport in America would.
No,
they're
being
babies.
I'm joking.
There are a handful of SEC coaches that would interview for
I've
that
job. I've heard Rachel Lawson's name
Rachel
thrown around.
How about what Courtney Dyfel did at Arkansas?
Yeah. And that would be a pretty natural transition to go from a place like Arkansas to a place
like
Texas.
If you're Texas, I mean,
don't you got to go big?
Yeah,
and do everything
go
like that in
everything
Texas.
Texas
everything's bigger in Texas.
I'm predicting Tim Walton in Texas.
Texas is all about making a splash. They have obviously the revenue to pay a guy like Tim Walton who would command a pretty decent salary, and obviously would Florida be able to match it because it is an SEC school that gets a decent amount of revenue as well. So that's the biggest thing for me. Can Texas rebuild? Because the recruiting process is the hardest thing to do when you have a talent-rich state like Texas, but you've seen what's happened over the last 6-7 years with the SEC and how the shift has started to come. You guys
Since I started working with you guys, I've
heard you discuss the shift in the transition from the Pac-12 dominance to what we've seen in the SEC. I think it could be a splashy hire.
Going to be fascinating to watch in the coming weeks. Let's move on to number 6 on our lineup card, and it is our last matchup of opening day Thursday, UCLA and Florida State. Florida State,
Stop. You're not going to continue for 1 second without saying, dun-dun-dun, UCLA pitcher Rachel Garcia, National Player of the Year.
Why was the why
you
was
were
the
intro, go why was, on why more
was the,
for that.
Why right? was the intro music so, like, scary?
It was.
Dun-dun-dun.
No, that's like.
I thought something, I you thought were going to deliver some horrible news. I thought you were going to deliver some horrible news just then. I was legitimately worried. And Rachel Garcia. National Player of the Year. I thought that's where you were going with that.
She went Florida State to start, and I'm like, hold on.
I didn't even get out the matchup, and you're jumping in on me.
Sorry.
Florida State, who's never won a national championship, wait for it, and UCLA, who's won it 11 times, led by...
Rachel Garcia. But you know what? It's the most appearances without a Women's College World Series championship for Florida State. So is this the year where Lonnie Alameda can take them a little bit
friend
deeper?
Friend of the podcast, Lonnie Alameda.
You know what? Booty busting. They do some booty busting at Florida State. That was on one of the previous podcasts.
That's right.
What do we think of this matchup? I mean, Garcia, they hit the crap out of it last week against Arizona, too.
UCLA is obviously a very talented team. Rachel Garcia, two-way player. Love watching her. Reminds me of Lisa Fernandez. Lots of talent there. But real quick, the thing that I love about Florida State is their pitching staff. They have a righty, they have a lefty. They're hard to prepare for. They've been very good as of late clutch. Some games that maybe a lot of people think they should have been ahead of, but they've had some walk-offs that they've had to win in close games.
Kylie Hansen and Megan King.
Yes, the pitchers,
the
right,
staff
that we're talking
for
about.
Florida
the
State.
Staff. Mm-hmm. So I like this Florida State team. I think, though, the little bit of the X factor for UCLA is
X-ing with her hands right now.
Fight, UCLA, fight.
Is the fact that they have been here 4 years in a row, and Florida State was not here last year. They were 2 years ago. So I think the experience level is a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm. Kylie Hansen, I think, plays a big role in that as well. She was a grad transfer from Florida Atlantic. Wasn't even sure if she was going to continue playing softball after she finished up at FAU, where she had a fantastic career, dealt with some injury issues the last couple of seasons. But she came to Florida State with a chance to go to the Women's College World Series. Cool to see that play out the way it has. Mm-hmm. But Amanda, you and I talked to Lonnie Alameda about this when we had him in April. She's developed a lot. Hit it. There it is, Jimmy Softball. Attaboy.
That took a while.
That did, yeah. He was being very careful with that. Her development with multiple pitches now, I think, was the biggest factor in her getting to this point now.
Yeah, well, you're not just going to see her throw a rice ball. You're going to see her throw a drop ball, too, and that's a pitch that she worked on that I know that Jess actually had an opportunity to go in the bullpen with Kylie Hansen and talk to her about her drop ball and Lonnie.
Yeah, it was
right?
cool. I'm such a nerd. Like, I think I'm still playing, and I come out to practice
Stanford.
Today and literally, like, stood in on Hansen and King. And one of the things about Kylie Hansen that just stood out to me is her rise ball is different level because it tunnels for such a long time and then pops late. And I swear I would have swung at that more times than not. But the fact is she now comes with the drop ball that Lonnie Alameda, that's been the biggest thing that she never had before. She just got a ton of Ks on a rise ball. How many pitchers have done that and gotten away with it? But now she's got this drop ball for contact. And so being more than a strikeout pitcher, to me, is that next level. I'm excited to see Florida State and who they are because I really felt like 2 years ago when they were here, they weren't ready.
So you got in the batter's box? And tell people what tunnels is.
All right, so tunnel is when it's like when the ball is released and it looks like it's...
From the pitcher's hand.
From the pitcher's hand.
No, it's a machine, actually. During in-game, that's
when
a new rule change for the 2018 World Series.
From the pitcher's ear. And it comes at you. And it looks exactly like a strike or any other pitch for a long period of time. So that tunnel, until all of a sudden it makes the movement that is no longer a strike. So for a rise ball, it's going to end up at your chin versus the pitch that literally the entire time as it's in the tunnel looks like strike, until it comes out of the tunnel and it's now a ball.
That's our last matchup, UCLA and Florida State. Let's move down to our flashbacks. We have a couple of national champions in the studio audience tonight.
Woo! Woo!
Flashback to 2009, the Washington Huskies, their lone national championship led by Danielle Laurie. And Danielle, talk to us about that run towards the title. Quit smacking my behind. Danielle Laurie!
I do remember Mendoza being pregnant when I watched videos back of Caleb in her belly.
Yeah.
Nice
memory. Memory.
I mean,
who's
there's
your favorite sideline reporter. You
were. And I love that you guys wore the blue polos just with the ESPN.
We were sure. Glad we got rid of those.
Yeah.
I'm regretting it a little bit actually with the 100 degree temperatures we're gonna see this week.
But I mean, I think the UMass is something that really allowed for us to win the title. I think that we faced a different kind of adversity that you just can't prepare for. And I think as athletes, you come to these moments where you're either going to choose to go face the bull by the horns or you're going to like bow down because it's just too hard. And I think that moment for us after we won the UMass 15 inning, it was like there's nothing that can be harder than that. And then on the flip side, I mean, there's nothing sweeter than winning a program's first national championship and understanding all the alums and everyone that got you to that pivotal moment. I think as well as understanding all the hard work we put in as young children to do that moment and face that, I think there's nothing sweeter.
Flashback 2009. Any Given Nine, we called it that year. Danielle Laurie, ladies and gentlemen, look for her on a Canadian Olympic team near you.
And what is her new role?
Yes,
yeah, would she explain the new role?
And she is joining us in the studio. We have a studio show this year.
On site.
Molly Mall. And Dilo with the Velo and Bro. joining us all in the studio. Flashback 2012. Kayla, take us dancing in the rain.
That's right. again, going off of what Danielle says, it's really cool to win the program's first. I ditto on everything you said. And winning the first in the SEC was really special too. But I think a lot of times you get to the World Series and you see these teams that win the national championship and you always assume that it's the best team on the field that win. But in our case, and you can ask any of my teammates, we were not the best team on the field. Oklahoma was better than us. They were more talented. They had more depth in the circle. But for us, it was about grittiness and finding a way to win against all adversity, no matter if it was raining, if it was sunny, if we had a delay. It was how could we just grit it out and win and stick together and dance in the rain when everything was going against us, when we were behind, when the weather turned. It was just about us sticking together and finishing a game, and we finished it.
No, yeah, you did.
I found you.
Oh, no.
Dancing in the rain.
I don't think we've got this music there.
No, we have to cut it off at 10 seconds, otherwise we have to pay royalties.
Shout out to the J Train, by the way. Woo! Yes. Woo! 2012.
Train-a.
Our flashback, national champs, Washington and Alabama. And it's time now
for Shaggin' Stats!
It's become a cottage industry in
that
of itself.
Never gets
My
old,
goodness.
Folks.
That never gets old unless you're listening. This is Holly Rowe, and my Shaggin' Stats for this podcast tonight are Anna Shelnut of Florida State has become known as Postseason Anna. Why, you ask?
Why?
Why?
Why
is it?
Because she's hitting .328 in the postseason with 19 RBI and 6 home runs. That is why Anna Shelnut is Shaggin' Stats as Postseason Anna.
Well, Holly, I'm going to take it back in the circle with Gabby Plain, the freshman pitcher for Washington. All year, she's only given up 14 extra base hits, and that's in 145 innings pitched. So she keeps the ball down. She keeps the ball in the ballpark.
All right. And my Shaggin' Stat, well, first off, I'm going to make a little comment that 4 of the 8 teams here in Oklahoma City have lefties that they use significantly in their pitching
stats.
She was
a left-handed pitcher. That's Michelle Smith.
Wait, was Michelle Smith a left-handed pitcher?
You went with
what?
Lefties.
And but I think what's even more amazing, though, is that there are two teams here, Florida and Florida State, that both have 2 pitchers on their staff or that have 22 wins each. So Kelly Barnhill, Lisa Ocasio, Kelly Hansen, and Megan King. So you look at those 4 pitchers, all of them with 22 plus wins.
So you're going staff over ace.
Yes.
Which has been the trend for quite some time.
Yes.
All right, I got Amanda Lorenz, and this is ridiculous. She's a junior, 195 games played, and she has reached base in 188. What? Okay? Man. I mean, just think about it. There's been seven times in her career that she has not reached first base. Like, wrap your mind around that. And that includes a streak of the last 76 games that she's played in, going back to last season, the 64 this year, that she... What does that mean?
That's, you're showing that's 96% of her career games.
A calculator, and Jessica's looking at the calculator going,
I tried to give her support a little bit.
There's like 0.96.
And you then, yeah.
I thought Stanford is a good school.
Yeah. So much way to let Nerd Nation down.
This is such Moore Park bias, by the way. She's from the same hometown.
But her last 76 at-bats, she's reached me. She's on a streak now. Is there going to be someone at the World Series that cannot let her from being on base.
Can get her out.
Yeah, can get her out.
You got to get her off the base path.
All right, I got a shagging stats right now. Did you know? Okay, Rachel Garcia is the new National Player of the Year. Only three times in history has the National Player of the Year won the national championship. Lauren Hager did it most recently. Kalani Ricketts did it at Oklahoma. Who is the third National Player of the Year? Wait for it.
D'Lo with the V-Lo?
Yeah! That is correct, America. D'Lo with the V-Lo.
Danielle Laurie for those playing at home.
Can Garcia do it?
Oh, Canada, your home and native land.
Again, I don't have the royalties for the Canadian national anthem.
We stand on guard for thee.
All right, my shagging stat. I'm a big fan of OPS because, and Jess and I have talked about this on
Major League. What is that, Adam?
I was gonna get there, Hal.
She's a cutter off from tonight.
She's a cutter off. I think someone needs to cut her off. Hey now. Jess and I have talked about this a lot during our Major League Baseball coverage. For those who don't know, OPS is your on base percentage plus your slugging percentage, and the reason I think that's a better basically show of how good of a hitter you are is because it values doubles, triples, and home runs more than just a single, mm-hmm. because batting average values every base hit the exact same way. And as we've seen, teams like Florida, teams like Washington, Oklahoma, they really focus on getting on base and providing run opportunities for the rest of their team. So with that being said, Sydney Romero...
The bar's closing soon, by the way.
Sydney Romero, her career OPS. Remember, she was a freshman on this stage a couple of years ago, 986 as a freshman, which is very good. Anything over 1,000, you're killing it. 932, a little bit of a drop off as a sophomore.
Thumb injury
with dealing with that issue. Back to health and inner junior year, 1167 OPS.
You're down
big
with
time
OPS?
Jump
down
up.
With OPS.
Are you down with OPS?
Sarah?
I didn't say it. That was Jessica Mendoza who said that.
Jimmy. It's all about the little sis.
Oh, I got some real good numbers for you guys. 314.
Mm-hmm. Pi?
Not pi.
Okay.
434.
Mm-hmm.
And 0.76.
0.76.
Are we supposed to guess? That's Rachel Garcia's batting average and ERA.
That is not correct.
That's a good guess.
But it's a great guess. Great guess.
Great guess.
314 is D'Lo with the Velos, NCAA strikeouts in the
just
postseason,
just in the tournament,
NCAA tournament games.
Man,
she had more than just Velo.
It's Caleb Rose batting average in the NCAA.
Whoa!
Tournament.
Whoa!
Are you
That's
serious?
Impressive.
And 0.76 is Michelle Smith's ERA.
Jimmy softball with a postseason edition of Shag and Stats. Nicely done.
And that will take us right into Gimme Some More, Jimmy.
Okay. Woo-hoo. All right.
And you live up to that.
Cut her off.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the intro.
Awkward silence ensues.
All right, let's have a little bit more fun here. Starting with best place to get a bottle of wine in Oklahoma City. Michelle, go first.
Oh, boy. Red Piano. The Red Piano Bar in Skirvin, Hilton. Actually, Mickey Mantle's. Come on.
Yeah, Mickey Mantle's Steakhouse. Oh, nice.
Wait, Mantle's Steakhouse or Mantle?
Mickey Mantle's.
Oh, Mickey Mantle's. Nice. Okay, I like Mantle's Steakhouse as well.
Yeah.
All right, best place to get a taco, Adam.
Oh, man.
We know you love your tacos.
I have a sandwich place here in Oklahoma City that I really like, if you're okay with me shifting directions a little bit. So,
is a taco a sandwich?
I think it can be, depending depending on the construction of it. But that's a much longer discussion for a much longer podcast. That's a whole show.
Podcast in itself.
If you have not been to Hobby's Hoagies in Oklahoma City, it's one of my absolute favorite sandwich joints in the entire country.
Whoa.
And go in, the entire wall is just people signing the wall. So I've gone in there probably four or five times every time I've come to Oklahoma City for a Thunder game, for this. We did the NCAA Wrestling Championships here a couple of years ago and went there for the first time. So go in, sign your name, get the Italian on me, and that's my suggestion for you.
The other good place to go is Texadelphia. We have a little bit of a tradition now to go in at least once for a chicken cheesesteak.
Mm. Let's go to Holly next. How many glasses of wine... before you ask an inappropriate question for someone?
Does she need
one? Unfortunately, the number is zero. I live for inappropriate questions. I keep trying not to ask them, and it's just not in my DNA.
I thought the 0.76 was actually your BAC.
All right,
let's
move it on and turn the batting over to next week.
Hey, we have a studio audience with us tonight. We'd like to thank you for joining us. Coverage begins Thursday at noon, 11 Eastern. Local time, noon Eastern. How many people and how many cameras, Holly Rowe?
There are over 180 crew members for ESPN, 36 cameras, and a plane. We will have aerial shots from the sky. This is one of the biggest events that ESPN is rolling out. It is so amazing, and we are excited to be a huge part of the coverage.
Wow. Beth, this is your 25th year as part of the World Series. Just tell us real quick, what was the first World Series?
When we came here, it was Arizona beating Cal State Northridge. We had half a production truck. The game was tape delayed. There was only one championship game. That's all we broadcast. We would actually play more golf. We'd come early and play more golf than we would broadcast softball. And now we have five production trucks plus a studio truck. This year we're adding a studio show between games. And you guys are actually going to be here. We need a good name. Maybe our viewers can help us out at Seven Innings Podcast. You guys are going to be here for the entire championship series, breaking it down in a more lounge type atmosphere.
So this is our version. This is our they can't tell the difference between Amanda and Adam. So I'm not, they don't even know who's talking. Myself, Amanda Scarborough, Laura Rutledge will all be in the right field. It's the studio set, but we're going to turn it into a bit of a lounge. Jimmy Softball is going to be producing for us. Mm-hmm. It's essentially our version. If you've watched the college football championship game, it's our version, which I've been a part of the last 2 years. Holly's been a part of it. This is essentially our version of the MegaCast, which is awesome. To have that for college softball, a sport that, as Beth described, they were spending more time playing golf than prepping for 25 years ago. We have a MegaCast, and that is a huge, huge deal. We'll get to be a part of that on ESPN3. You'll be able to watch it on your app. It's a supplement to what Beth, Jess, Michelle, and Holly will be doing during the championship series.
Can we call it a MegaCast if it's three people? I'm just asking for a friend.
I think it could be mega.
I think it's a mini-cast.
Why you gotta go there with that?
It's a magnificent cast.
Just spell
that.
Okay,
I'll give you that. That's all right.
Now I'm just putting my smile away now.
Or you can watch us on ESPN as well.
We've already crowned a D2 champ, Southern Indiana, and a D3 champ, Virginia Wesleyan. Back to back. Who's taking D1? BMO, Horo, Smitty, Doza, Scarborough, Rutledge, Molly Mall, Adam. D-Lo with the V-Lo, bro, and Jimmy Softball. We're going to be with you at some point later in the week, and of course, breaking down the entire champ series. This is the Seven Innings Podcast. Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Let's do this. Oklahoma City.
Woo!